Hi, I'm Ken Carroll. These recordings are provided by ChinesePod.com.
This is a Learning 2.08 conference podcast. This and all conference conversations recorded live in September 2008.
How it's worthwhile, especially to students, but also to parents, like, is this going to help with the SAT? So it's things like that. And then there's some sharing of rationales and resources. And then I want to get into the nuts and bolts of what I've come to appreciate through practice and some research about ways to set up a blog. And then that should still leave us some time at the end to share some ideas and maybe work through some of the issues that present themselves and things I haven't answered yet. Okay. So I just want to first just start talking about what literacy is, and this is sort of partly my idea of a joke, but there's literacy a long time ago. And here's literacy for my parents was Fun with Dick and Jane, and it was, you know, very standard, this is literacy, this is reading these books, and I still get that. I still have parents asking, why don't you teach grammar? And it wasn't until we bought grammar books that I could say, look, we have a grammar book that teaches, you know, parents. Some parents would say, okay, you teach grammar now. It didn't help to say, well, we contextualize it when issues present themselves. So for some people, that's still what literacy is. And then if you were at Learning 2.0 last year and you went to one of Jamie McKenzie's, he made a point about literacy that was basically this. Here's a picture of a girl reading a Dick and Jane book, but you're looking at it on a computer. So is it digital literacy or is it just literacy is the subject of this picture? So one of the points I'd like to make today is just that writing is writing, even if it's on a blog. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a scribbler or a notebook or printed on a piece of paper. It's still writing. And that's an important part of the writing process. It's an important part of a writing community. And we all know how important writing is to what we do. So if reading and writing is literacy, is there really a difference if you put it online? And this was a gag that an artist in England did. He got an old rock and put a cave painting on it, and then put a shopping trolley on it. Slipped it into a case at the British Museum, and it was there for a good long time before somebody noticed it and said something. And this is the second time he's done something naughty like that. But was fun. It's an update. So, what I wanted to do is figure out, would blogging make any difference to the writing program in my classroom, to the writing process, but specifically what I tested, sort of field tested last year, was does it make any difference in peer review? Because one of the frustrations I had with peer review was I'd have kids share their stuff, and sometimes they'd say, you and you share today, please. And they'd read their stuff, they'd read each other's stuff, and the feedback they'd give sometimes was just, it's okay, it's good. And there was a real cultural of niceness. And even when I feed them some lines, you know, I want you to end four sentences. Something I like about your story is this, something I'm confused about or not sure of is this, you might want to add this, and I can't remember what the fourth one is, but there were four and I wrote them on the board. And so they'd go through that. And that worked pretty well, but still I didn't see a whole lot of revision going on, and so that's something I wanted to try with the blog. At Concordia, we have a built-in course management system called MyConcordia that was designed in HKIS, and the opportunity presented itself pretty seamlessly because it has a built-in blog engine. So I wanted to start using that with a little bit of purpose. So. What I did was I created a blog for my class. I was the first author, but then I added all my students to it. And I'll go into the details a little later about how it worked. And I had the kids start posting their work on the blog and commenting on the blog. And I did it back to back. First I did just good old paper, or just swapping their laptops, pairing off and reading each other's stories. And then I had them the next story they wrote write their stories, and then post them to the blog, and then pair them off. You're going to read his story, he's going to read your story. And it was funny the first time I did it, because it was all blog-based. It was on the internet. And the first thing they did was, okay, and they swapped computers. And I said, what are you doing? So what they had to do was, in class time, read the other person's story and use the comment feature to give some feedback. And all that really, and that wasn't the most effective way to do it, because it just sort of compounded one of the peer review problems, and that is you're giving kids, you know, 3 or 5 minutes. One kid might be done in a minute, other kids might be done in 10 minutes. It feels like a waste of time for some of them, and other kids feel rushed. So at the end of the year of using the blog, this is sort of, I think, one of the best benefits of using the blog. And so old school peer review is kind of like this. I want to thank Matthew and Aaron for helping me out with this. One kid writes a story and asks the other kid, hey, would you mind reading my story and giving me some feedback? Sure, no problem, because they're eager to help each other. A minute later, she's getting a little impatient. Why is he taking so long? Does he hate it? And he's still reading it. And this is a short story that one of my students wrote last year. It started out with heart pounding, breath sawing in and out. Elizabeth ran for dear life as the shrill siren of police cars chased after her. But he's still decoding it, because it's only a minute later and she's getting nervous. So a minute later, she says, what do you think? And he says, he's still trying to figure out what it is in English. And he says, it's very good. Yeah. And one of the survey questions I gave my kids at the beginning of the year was, tell me about feedback. You know, there's a few questions like that. And one of the themes that came back was, don't give me nice feedback. And one of the kids actually quoted his mom, and it was anonymous, but I just wanted to go to that mom and say, you were quoted today. But one of the kids wrote sort of the exemplar of the same comment that 90% of the kids said was, weak or vague feedback makes me very confused and frustrated. Very good doesn't help me much. So that was kind of the challenge that I hope the blog would change. And the nice thing about the blog is you get stuff like that that's written down, and it helps me as a teacher respond to it. And I can see, because they're written down, I can take time to review the kids' comments and see what they're thinking. So although you might set up a blog with a certain plan in mind, it evolves as you go through it, because it is a dialogue. Okay. So what the best benefit of the blog was the non-synchronous communication, that somebody puts their story up there. I still assigned them, because I wanted them to read each other's work. But I said, just you two are going to share each other's work, but go ask two other people, or just comment on two other people's stories. So they're getting some feedback. I contrived it that way. I wanted to make sure they were using the blog. But this is kind of the way it worked the best. Same two kids, thank you for helping out on your break. I just posted my story draft to the blog. Would you read it? Tell me what you think. Sure. So he goes to the kid's story. Here's her second draft of the story. Same stuff, heart pounding, breath sawing in and out. Elizabeth ran for dear life as the shrill siren of police cars, etc. But he's in the comfort of his home now, even though it looks like a school building behind him.
That doesn't look like our school, does it?
Lots of people have a soccer field at their apartment. But he's on his computer, and he's got the classroom blog open, and he's got Babelfish open, and he's got dictionary.com open. And so when he gets to something he's not sure of, he can translate it, or he can MSN somebody and say, what does this mean? And so he can take his time with it, and then craft a response to it. And it's the same wow, but it's not a befuddled wow. It's, this girl can write. So this is one of the comments that one of the kids actually posted for her blog. And it was nice for me to see this, because they obviously were starting to use the 6 traits language we had talked about. Oh, your word choice and your sentence fluency is amazing. I love how you say her breath is sawing in and out. How she smiles wistfully and as she cradles the teacup. So the person who wrote this took some time to write it. Although once in a while kids would get into chat speak, they still would write some sort of chat anagram or acronyms, but then they'd get right into the content. It was really cool. They'd say, oh, what a dorky story, LOL. But then they'd write something like this to give some honest feedback. I really like this, but is this really going to work? How are you going to end it? I'm not sure how it ended. Stuff like that. So there was a lot of compliments, but there's also specific feedback, which is something the kids were asking for, and it was something I was hoping they would start to give for each other. So why use blogs? One of them is this. It gives kids time to process things. They don't have to do it on the spot in class. They can work at their own pace. If it's a laptop program, they can do it whenever they can open their laptop, but if they've got time in a computer, any time between, you know, this class and the next class, they can really give comments back to each other without feeling like, what if I say something stupid? What if I say something wrong? What if I don't understand what I'm reading? Okay. So, at the end of my little bit of research last year, I gave them another survey and asked them, what did you think about the blogs? And I asked that in various forms. And one of the kids wrote this, blogs are awesome. People don't have to have a comment immediately if they do not have an idea about other people's story. So that was a theme that ran through it. That kid just happened to say it better than anybody. Okay, so I teach in the middle school, and so, you know, friendships and relationships are important. Obviously, that's important whatever grade it is. But the attractive part about a writing community is it taps into the social nature of school, and it's fun to be friends with people. It's fun to have that relationship. So really what you're doing is you're just harnessing. The blog is a good tool to harness that desire to interact with each other and to communicate with each other. And it does it without being constrained to that certain time. And that was another thing, another response from one of the students after we used the blog for a couple months was, I find peer review very helpful. It motivates me to write better. Also, advices from my peers are extremely useful. And that's really what I was hoping I would see. I tried not to, you know, imagine what I'd see or try and, that's really what I wanted, trying to do something new with peer review. So, there's that digital divide. How many people have seen that one? It gets passed around. My daughter's 4. The day's coming soon. So, in my mind, the blog, among other technologies, is a digital bridge. And this is another kid's comment. This sort of made the whole thing worthwhile. I had some questions where you just rate something as helpful, not very helpful, extremely helpful, things like that. And then somebody explained their answer. For the question, the blog helped me think more about what I was learning in class, I disagreed, because when I was posting or commenting on the blog, I didn't really feel like I was learning. Although I actually was. I felt more like writing an article for a newspaper, and it was really fun rather than strict learning. And that was the other benefit that I found from using blogs, is it adds some authenticity to it. I decided to do a public blog so anybody in the world could visit it. You might not want to do that. You might want to make it private for all kinds of reasons. And I also, again, contrived it a little bit. I wrote to some friends and said, would you mind visiting this? I wrote to my mom, would you mind visiting this? I have a friend who was teaching in Saudi, he had his fifth graders read some of the stories. And one of my students went home and emailed everybody, and his cousins, third cousins, fourth cousins, and they started visiting his blog. And it was really cool for the kids to open up the blog and look at their story and see 10 comments or even 2 comments. And I wasn't able to do it last year, but now I can do it because they've tweaked the blog a little bit. But you know, Cluster Maps makes those hit counters where it puts a dot everywhere in the world somebody hits it. What's the name? There's a writer's blog in Fairbanks called Tell the Raven. I think that's the school mascot. He has a hit counter on it. And so the kids watch that, and they've had hits from everywhere in the world, practically. And it's such a boost for these fifth graders to see somebody in Switzerland read my story, somebody in Africa read my story, somebody, etc. I also had some kids who, you know, kept their own time. They were on at 10 o'clock at night, and the blog really helped them. And that's when they did their best work. And so the nice thing about the blog is it's a 24/7 writer's workshop. You don't have to worry about that 1 hour you have the students in a day or every other day. And then, again, the fact that somebody posts a story and they get feedback a day later gives people time to respond. And if they've got internet access, they can get to it, and the kids had fun with it. I'll post some of these slides, at least not the picture ones, because I didn't get permission from the kids, but stuff like this I'll put on the Ning site. And then, I, this just I came across this, and I think this helps a lot for literacy, for digital interventions at all in school, but especially for the blog. Howard Gardner was interviewed in the Washington Post, and he said, if we're going to make sense of what's happening with literacy in our culture, we need to be able to triangulate, to bear in mind our needs and desires, the media as they once were and currently are, and the media as they're continually transforming. And blogging's still new, and part of the reason it's fun is that it's got some novelty, but it also evolves in a blogging writing program. A blogging aspect of a writing program evolves too. And I think it's a good way to triangulate what's old and what's new. It's a good way to make that bridge. It's also, you know, there's a digital record, and so, you know, when we want to justify the class time, or if we have to ask for money to pay for a private blog site, we have that record to say, well, look, here's the kid's story, here's the kind of feedback I'm getting and things like that. So it fits a lot of needs for teachers, but I think also for students. Anybody have any questions? So that's sort of why bother. I want to move into the how at this point. Anybody have any questions? As I said, our school has a built-in blog program, but there's a lot of blog hosts out there. Blogger's really popular. WordPress is popular. They're both easy to use, and the nice thing about most blog interfaces, they're all the same. They all have the same features, and so that makes it easy to get to know them. An issue in China is sometimes Blogger and WordPress get blocked because there's so many blogs out there. If somebody says something that's offensive, the party will just shut it down. And so my wife and I have a blog on Blogger for our adoption process. We couldn't touch it for a whole year because somebody said something. So there's two. You could just Google blog servers, blog engines, things like that. If you go to tinyurl.com, YVV807, there's a list of 40 of them.
There.
I'll put this on the next site too. Some of them will charge you, some of them make their money from advertising, and some of them are just flat out free for whatever reason. Okay. So some of the considerations to think about as you're choosing a blog or choosing a blog engine or blog host, I should say, is do you want to have private access, that is only members can access the blog, or do you want to have public access? Sometimes there's a fee for private access, and a friend of mine in the States had to pay like $30 a month or $20 a month because she wanted to have her kids use a blog, and nobody at school would pay for it. So out of her own pocket, she fronted that, and she got some really good results from it, especially with differentiation, getting everybody involved, which had the effect of building a stronger social network in the classroom. But nobody bought that last year. Maybe this year they'll pay for it. Another issue with the public versus private is sometimes there's students who don't want their picture or don't even want their name online. I used to teach in Madison, Wisconsin, and a lot of people from Witness Relocation are placed in Madison. I don't know why. Or WITSEC, it's called now. And so we couldn't put pictures out there. We couldn't put names out there because it would endanger these families. So, if you just have to decide, or maybe that's a teaching team or an administrative issue, is just to know what kind of constraints do we have about putting kids' pictures on there. With our school, kids' pictures automatically go on the blog if I add them as an author. So I had to make sure through talking to the counselor and my principal. Are we okay with this? Has anybody said no pictures? And one student had said to the school, my niece's picture does not go on the internet. Nobody knows we're in China, and I want to keep it that way. So we just changed her profile picture to something, you know, that wasn't her. And that took care of that. I haven't investigated a whole lot of hosts. Some of them will allow you, probably most of them will allow you to moderate comments, and that's something you might have to decide when you first set it up, when you're creating it. You could certainly go back and change that, but you have to decide based on your school policy or based on what you know about the school culture or how wide you want to have it, is do you want to moderate the comments? And typically, what happens is somebody makes a comment and it ends up in your inbox, and you get a yes or no. You want to post this or don't you want to post it? I went loose with it, and I didn't moderate, and I just kept an eye on things, and I was fine. But it got a little dicey once the blog address got out there, and some other kids from other schools were commenting. It wasn't anybody said anything nasty, but it was just sort of, I think your story is boring. Don't talk to my kids like that. But nobody said anything stupid. Nobody put spam on there. But you might want to moderate. And that sort of presents the issue of how big do you want this to be. If you've got 36 students, or how many students, how much time do you have to moderate? Or do you want to share the load with somebody else? Or even some of the kids might could also be moderators. You could possibly set up an email address that is unique to that blog that other kids could access if you had 5 kids, just to help you moderate sort of the leaders. And then related to all this is the free, or are you going to pay a fee? Who's going to pay for it? Do you have to pay for it? Is it free but there's advertising? That's just something that needs to be monitored. Or with Google AdWords, I believe, you can have some control over the kind of advertising that goes on there. Because, yes?
What's a typical fee?
Let's see. A year ago, I was looking and it ranged from, I think the cheapest was $9.95 a month. And then there's some where it's $9.95 a month or $50 for the year kind of thing. So it's not huge. It just depends on where the money's coming from. I know everybody's situation is different. So there's a lot of advantages to going without the adverts. It doesn't take up as much bandwidth and things like that. You don't have to worry about what ads are going to be showing up. There we go. All right. So in terms of the software, that's some of the considerations. In terms of scaffolding kids to use the blog respectfully and usefully, somebody gave me some advice a couple of years ago, and it was the tighter a teacher holds onto a blog, the less kids buy into it. And so, and I knew that without realizing it because I had done that the year before, and nothing happened. And so the next year when I did it, I just sort of stepped back and I said, here's our blog. One of the kids really loved HTML, so I let her play with HTML. That's why her text is bigger than anybody else's. and she did white text on a blue background. I sat back and I watched it happen. And actually one of the blogs, the whole blog, if you were to print it out, it'd be 100 pages. Everything's underlined. She doesn't know how she did it, but you can still read it, so I just let it happen. So I let the kids, you can decide how much you want to do that. Let the kids play with HTML a little bit, plug the code in to change the colors, or decide, do we want to come up with our own template? Because some hosts will let you make your own templates and stuff like that. And then you can also decide, sometimes it's better to have you as the teacher be the only author. Kids submit your story and you put it on there. That's more work for you, but you can see what's going up. I decided to make all my kids authors. And it was just a matter of plugging in their names, and then they became an author. So that meant they could go onto that blog and do anything. They had the same powers I had, almost. I had more because I was the administrator, but they could go on, they could put stuff on, they could take it off, and so we had talking about it, and nobody had a problem with it. Nobody violated the tech agreement at our school. Nobody deleted other people's comments or anything like that. They were all good about it. There was a good level of trust, and so that was the creative input. And it was also helpful to set up at the beginning, before we even started using the blog, some of the rules of the road. It's a public forum, so whatever you put on there, anybody can read. Okay, so don't say anything don't write anything you wouldn't say to a person. If somebody writes something to you, talk to me immediately so we can resolve it. Either get rid of the comment, or talk it out in the community if that's where it started. And then, a little late, I didn't start with this, but I found it to be very helpful to teach the kids about tags. lot of kids didn't know what tags were. So I explained to them that the way that we use tags was when you put up a blog entry, you can give different categories. I think they're almost always called tags, but I'm sure somebody else figured out a different way to categorize it. Sometimes it's keywords. So I wanted to keep it simple, so I had them tag their story just with their name. And I'll show you in a minute how it looks on the blog post we have at our school. And that did two things. One was for my sanity, because I was tracking to make sure the kids always put their stories up. So I wanted to not have to scroll through entry after entry to look for Jackie's, and then look for Steven's, and then look for so-and-so. So I taught them to tag their stories with their name. So Billy puts in his first draft, he tags it, first draft, Billy. So on the, I'll show you in a minute. So on the blog itself, I could go to a left column and just look for the tag that says Billy, and it takes me to every post that Billy's ever done. So I can see, oh yeah, okay, he's right on track, things like that. And it also, in theory, although I didn't see this happening a whole lot, or at least I wasn't aware of it, it also builds readership, because some of the kids write some really interesting stories, and I know some kids were waiting for the second sequel, for the sequels to the original story, and if they can just look for the tag for Hong Xin, because they want to read about his adventure story, the next installment, they don't have to scroll again, they just click on the tag, Hong Xin, everything Hong Xin has written is there. Will Gil get out of jail? Will the mean teacher lock him up again? These are the things his readership wanted to know. Tags help that, and it felt really cool for the kids to know people wanted to read their stories. And it also helped me for assessment, and that's something that's controversial with blogs too, is how do you assess this? I gave him some participation points for commenting. I didn't get into the nitty-gritty of what their comments said. I kept an eye on what their comments were so I could talk in class and practice more about giving specific useful feedback, but I basically just, I had a checklist. Okay, Lucy's commented 18 times, Jackie's done 4, and so all I had to do was go to their tags and make sure they were doing what I asked them to do. Okay, so as far as uses go, so now that you've got the blog, so what? One of the useful ways was just to put prompts up there. So one thing that worked really well was to go to Flickr and find some really groovy pictures and post them and just say, here's a picture, write a story inspired by it. And this is by a photographer who goes by the handle Sporking Rourke. And then I also put the assignment parameters there, and it was nice because the kids go back and find it. When's it due? When's the first draft due? Because it was a little bit complicated. I put the dates there. I even let them know when we'd be able to work on it in class and stuff like that, and gave them my expectations. So the blog is a nice place to put the assignments themselves. You can have multimedia prompts. You could put a sound file up there, or a short video, or link them to another video, things like that, and say, here's your story. Based on this, I left the climax out. You write the climax. Write the next episode in the story, stuff like this. Some kids wrote about the broken cup, some people wrote about the hole in the wall, some people wrote about the graffiti. It was interesting, and across the gamut of genres, the short stories that came up just from this picture, so that one worked really well. When we first started doing this, the peer review was nothing new. I asked them to be very specific about asking for feedback. Don't just say, give me feedback. Ask what kind of feedback you want so that the other person knows how to respond. And that helps the student think about what their strengths and weaknesses are as a writer. It helps them to be purposeful about their writing and revision. And, you know, the first draft, please give me feedback. It's good. Does that answer your question? And then very quickly, because they could see each other's work on the blog, that helped. They saw what other people were writing, and kids got more specific. Yes, please tell me if it's good or bad, but more specifically, I want to know, do you understand what my story's about? Is my word choice okay? My sentence fluency, does it flow? She went a little bit over the top asking for everything, but you know, she wanted feedback on the idea fluency. Is the plot intelligible? Is the memory flashback clear? And here she gets into more specifics. Can you tell it's a memory flashback? Are you engrossed? I need a title. So stuff like that. So very specific. And that was just, you know, I had to be patient to and help the kids learn how to use this some more. Okay. I had the kids, let me just say this right now. I overused the blog. when I was parsing all the survey data, they got tired of it because I had them do a story draft. The story outline. You know, I want plot, I want characters, I want location. Had them do that. Then I had them do their first draft. Then I had them do the second draft. And then the final draft. And by the last one, I went, I'm going to blog again. And if I had given it more time, if I had sort of held back and said, put your story outline up there, maybe your final draft, your first draft, and then forget about it. The commenting spiked like this. Oh, this is really cool. Not again. And if I had maybe not pushed so hard at the beginning, it would have been a nice gradual trend that continued going up. Another way, though, just for kids to get feedback is just to put the story outline out there before they actually start writing. And that helped also with the writing process because it made the kids put the brakes on and say, okay, I have an outline, before they start, you know, working with the font and things like that. They're incubating on what the story outline is before they start actually writing the story. And they got some good feedback, and it wasn't all nice. Oh yeah, it's a great story, it sounds good. It sounds interesting, it's good that you picked a narrow enough topic, which is, you know, right out of the Right Traits book. I'm sure it's feasible to write a story about this. Make sure there's enough conflict to keep the story going, though. So that was pretty straightforward feedback. It wasn't brutally honest, but it was honest. And the only other comment was the author, Robin, wrote back the second comment to his own story, and he spelled feasible correctly. So I guess, you know, we all have to learn to take constructive criticism. So his passive aggression was feasible. He spelled it wrong. But he did, you know, he changed his story based on his peers' feedback, which is worth so much more than my feedback. Okay, another nice thing about the blog is it's a good place for skills practice. So for 6+1 traits, you know, the plus one, the cheater one, because it really should be 7 traits by now, is presentation. So I just found 3 Harry Potter covers and started a discussion about judge a book by its cover. How do you relate to this? You know, what do you judge about the story just by looking at the cover? And it had a nice conversation just through kids commenting on, oh, I'd rather read this one because blah, 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 or that one looks really scary, or that one looks like a kid's book when really, you know, I've read that book and it's nothing like that. And it was a really cool discussion, actually, but it also got the kids actually practicing presentation. And then it also came in handy for social studies. If we as well as other language arts, our high school put on A Midsummer Night's Dream, and we went to see it, and one of the grade 7 teachers put this on her blog, so I stole it and just changed 7 to 8, and sort of pushed a little bit. Grade 8 students are too young to understand Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, and that got their ire a little bit. How dare you say we can't do something? And some of them wrote back and, yeah, we can understand it. It may have taken 10 minutes to understand what's going on. Or some people wrote back and said, yeah, except that in drama class we read part of the story. Can we do that in English class next time there's a Shakespeare play? So again, I got some really useful feedback. We watched a short movie, and rather than discussing it in class, we showed it. I put some questions up there, and the next day we talked about it after kids had a time to read other people's comments and then formulate their own comments. It was helpful. Okay, and then you can also post video, and a colleague of mine has downloaded the old Schoolhouse Rock videos and put those up there. You can embed the video into most blogs, or you can send the kids with a link to YouTube. If they go to YouTube, then, you know, comments are sometimes something you don't want elementary school, middle school, high school students reading. So that's a choice you have to make. If you don't have the bandwidth at your school to embed the video there, you might want to send them to YouTube. Anyway, just as an added bonus, this is a great Firefox add-on. Download Helper. It's a freebie, and it's, if you want to download videos so you don't have to worry about fluctuations in bandwidth. That's what he used to get that. Okay. And that was it. So, does anybody have any questions? Or I kind of glossed over the tag thing and how that looks. I can show you what that looks like on the blog.
You were using one blog and all students were writing in the same blog.
Yeah, I set up two blogs, one for each class that I was teaching.
I was just looking at the blog.
And it was private, meaning
I was just trying to look at your blog.
it was public. I made it public.
We did.
Yeah. I put all the kids on here. I probably should cover up their names. But well, it's public. Never mind. So all the kids, they're all, Aaron could go on here and do anything he wanted. But I knew where he lived, so. So here's the tag. So if I wanted to, like, one of the cool things was, and I cheated here, I wrote to my friend who's an AP Lit teacher in Yokosuka, Japan. He visited the blog and found one of the kids' stories and wrote, oh, I love how you did this, blah, blah, blah. And it was a really mature response. Oh, by the way, I teach AP Lit. She's like, you know, that was a boost for this kid to have somebody read that. Haven't done it. So he could go back. He said, you know, a lot of people wrote, oh, I love your outline. I can't wait to read your final one. Well, they could just go back and, okay, what did Robin make of that story? Is it more feasible now? You can just click on Robin and it takes you to Robin's pages. Okay. There you go. So did that answer your question?
Yeah. I'm just curious about how you handle grammar, spelling, punctuation, online stuff.
The rules of the road with my students was that I wanted the drafts to be, you know, I'd allow some leverage with the drafts. I wanted them first to write it in a word processing program and then copy and paste it rather than write it. Because when you're online, I get into a different mode. So I wanted them to write it first and then post it. And with the comments, I didn't have to do much. I let them respond to each other in their own language. You know what I mean? And more than one kid just sort of started very socially. And then used chat speak, some of it inappropriate, but if nobody knew what the acronym meant, that was cool. But embedded in that was some really good feedback. So I didn't mind the chat speak and the comments. As far as the writing went, though, I said I'm expecting it the same sort of quality as if you were handing it in a piece of paper.
Yeah, if you use this strange rubric, I found the kids, they know what's expected. It's like just like if they handed it in as a handwritten piece of work. I mean, it's like the same expectation level.
Yeah. Just for the comments, I didn't pay any attention, but for the other part, the actual writing part, I asked them to keep an eye on that.
I was just going to ask you about assessment, and can you explain assessment?
Oh, well, yeah, sorry, I gave them participation for things like commenting, and then I used a rubric, a standard writing rubric we were using in the classroom since the beginning of the year for their stories themselves.
So the participation was, it's an expectation as a member of this class in this blog that you will comment on four other people's work, and if you don't do that, then you're not going to get participation, right?
Right, yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, it was just, you know, out of 10 points. It made a difference, but it wasn't a make or break kind of thing. So it was a low threshold, that one.
So setting up a blog, is it pretty straightforward in terms of you get on one of these blog sites and they take you through the steps?
Yeah,
simple, or
is it is pretty simple, and most of them are the same. You just need an email address, and they'll host it for you.
It'll take you through the options about tagging and all that.
Yeah, there's a couple layers of complexity. The very simple one is pretty easy. If you want to start tricking it out and changing the colors and things like that, you can do that too. But setting it up, if you have a decent bandwidth, seriously, 5 minutes ought to do it. But they'll explain the tagging, and usually, add a post.
Yeah, if you use EdgeBlogger, they have little tutorials too that'll take you through, like, you know, you'll ask a question, how do I tag? And it'll take a little tutorial window opens up and says, this is how you tag something. Well, this is what a tag is for. So some of them are quite helpful.
Does EdgeBlogger have a blog site?
Yeah. I can look and see.
Yeah, I should put that one on the EdgeBlogger. That's a big one, yeah. Thank you.
Which one is that?
EdgeBlog.
Would you blog it?
EDU? BL.
Oh, EDU blog.
Yeah.
These kids just go on and on and on, don't
they? Well, that's what I said earlier.
I
found that, like, you had a person come and comment on one of your students. Those are the most meaningful comments. Like, the ones that we had that were the most effective on my students were ones that did not come from my classroom. Like, somebody else came, made a comment on theirs, and they're like, it was like that click. It was like, somebody else is reading this, and they're not in this room, and they're not people I know. But those are the best comments. So it's like, oh, I really liked how you did this in the story, or oh, this was a really great idea in your post, but I would have liked to have seen this, too.
Yeah.
And that's the next time I saw my students, like, oh, yeah, the person wanted this, they wanted a link to that, so I got to put a link in now, and, you know, those
oh,
kind
yeah.
of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ours is more nonfiction, so.
Oh, sure. Well, that's a nice example of how it evolves.
Yeah.
It's, there's the connectivity to other things. This is slowly loading. I just wanted to... Our platform here is built on open source, so most blog hosts look like this one. Just use your imagination. For yes.
It didn't work well last time. You mentioned that basically you set up with just one email account, but when the students go in, is there any way to keep Johnny from saying he's Deborah's, signing in as Deborah? I mean, are they signing with their email address, or are they... Or is that not even an issue with how making posts?
Let's see, off-campus, if you were to do an off-campus host...
You still log in as your own user, though.
Yeah, you might want to make that one of the DAO of logging in your classroom is please use, if they have a school account, please log on with your school account and make your name, at least something we agree on. And maybe you want to do that to solicit names from the kids and plug it in yourself. I know that's, you know, extra half hour out of your day, but...
Otherwise, people could what? They could sign on as anyone, and
I guess if you were to open it to your students and say go to this website and add yourself as an author, they could go on there and put somebody else's name and things like that. Usually, it's by in this. Yeah, because sometimes to add a blog author, you can just send an email to somebody and invite them. A student could get up to some mischief. Go to that site and say my name is whatever, something inappropriate, or somebody else's name, and that just muddies the waters. Or you could get the kids' emails yourself, and maybe on some you could upload a spreadsheet of email addresses or type them in one at a time. So that way you're controlling, you know, student. You can still have the student nicknames, but you're punching them in, so you have control over it. Okay, so this is basically what most blog writing formats look like. Throw the title in there. You can link to add pictures, emoticons, lines, websites. You can link to files. A lot of them now link directly to YouTube, or you can embed your own video or add sound files, and then you can also play with all the usual word formats. A lot of them will let you throw in some code if you like to play with code, or if the kids like to play with HTML, and then you also have the preview vein. And then, as far as tags, usually, sometimes it's on this page, sometimes it's on the next page. Oh, it's still loading. It's still loading. It'll ask you what tags you want, and that's something I did on the board. Because I'd also thought about having a tag for first draft, so whenever somebody wanted to look at a first draft, they just click on that one tag. Let's call it first draft. Anytime you put a post up, you can put as many tags on as you want. So you can put, the kids can put their own name, first draft, and maybe if you wanted to really talk about genre, you could say mystery, and that's another one of their tags. So they might have multiple tags for the story. It just helps other people navigate. It helps you as the teacher administer it and navigate it. Oh, another thing that's nice about the blogs is the RSS feeds, which is cool because whatever they're using as an RSS feeder, it gives the kids some sort of notification that somebody's updated, things like that.
Do you embed RSS feeds in yourself as well, onto this blog site?
I did. I had the kids add this one. We at our in at least in seven and grade seven and eight at our school where we have the laptop program, we require the kids to use Firefox. And Firefox has this nice toolbar where you can add an RSS feed here. So far, it's kind of underutilized. So I said, as far as I know, you only got two teachers asking you to link to a blog or RSS feed a blog. So I want you to use mine so that when they've got this toolbar open, they can check it and see what's new. But if it takes off at our school, we'll probably have to teach the kids about aggregators.
Can you show us how you see that?
How I set it up? Yeah. Usually it's at the bottom of the blog.
There's a little free.
Oh, user error. Or it's on the sidebar. Well, what do you know? Sorry, I know this is nauseating to watch this. We actually
usually end up quick links in ours, isn't it?
Anyway, it's that little emoticon, that little icon that's up here.
The orange one. Yeah. Yeah. Usually at the bottom of the blog, there's the orange RSS icon.
You just click on that.
And when you do it in Firefox, you click on RSS subscribe to this blog. It'll by default put it in Firefox's toolbar with RSS feeds, but you also have the choice of other aggregators. So it's pretty easy to lead the kids through it step by step. I had till 10:15, so if you want to go, thanks for coming, and if you want to stick around, nobody's using the room till 10:30. 11:30.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
This and all Learning 2.08 podcasts are released under a Creative Commons 3.0 share alike license. To learn more about the Learning 2.08 conference, visit our website at learning2cn.ning.com.